Call the meeting a conference committee.
Gavel, so
that... Morning.
We have a conversation.
I don't know if there's been any chance to go over that last night.
Did I do what?
Go over the farm.
Not yet.
We're going to be after it. Good morning.
Morning.
Welcome to the Conference Committee on Senate File 238. Our goal today, Representative Huntley and I have talked, and what we would like to do is move through this bill in whatever periods of time we can throughout the day. We may need to recess to go to the floor or go to other obligations, but then we'll reconvene, and we'll continue to reconvene and recess until we've moved through and completed our work for this conference committee. So that's our goal and our intent for today. With that, I think we can begin by, I'd like to have everyone introduce themselves, and some of our members are not here, but they'll be able to introduce themselves when they arrive. So we can begin.
I'm Emily Cleveland with House Research.
Kim Norton, House, and I represent the Rochester area.
I'm Erin Murphy from the House in St. Paul.
Dan Severson, represent Sac Rapids in St. Cloud area.
Tom Huntley, City of Duluth.
Kathy Sharon, Senate District 23, which has several cities in it. Mankato, St. Peter, North Mankato, Sibley County.
I'm Christina. I work for Senator Sharon.
David Gio from Senate Research.
Ron Latz represents St. Louis Park, Hopkins, and Golden Valley.
Steve Dell, I live 75 miles west of here. I represent Dassel, Litchfield, Hutchinson, Glencoe, and other small cities in that area.
Okay, great. Thank you. You have an agenda before you. Besides introductions, what we'd like to begin with now is, and to try to accomplish within the next hour, is which I'm certain we'll be able to do and begin discussion, is to review the side-by-side, which is the comparison of the Senate and the House bills. So I will call upon staff to be able to help us with that. In your folders, you should have copies of the side-by-side of the bill itself, comparing all of the language and also a summary bill comparison that's been prepared by House Research and Senate Counsel.
Madam Chair, on page two of the side-by-side, first section is House only. House adds a definition of dislocated worker. Adds to the definition of dislocated worker by adding persons who lose employment in a restaurant or bar because of the state law prohibiting smoking. Next section, Senate 1 and House 2 are identical. They modify the public policy behind the Clean Indoor Air Act, establishing the purpose of the act to eliminate rather than limit smoking in public places in order to protect the public from the hazards of secondhand smoke. Senate 2 and House 3 are identical. They add a definition of indoor area. Senate 3 and House 4 are also identical. They define place of employment as any indoor area where two or more persons engage in employment or perform services for which persons are usually paid. Vehicles and private residences are defined as places of employment under certain circumstances. On the next page, Section 4 and 5 modifies the definition of public place. The definition is expanded to include bars, and the House excludes retail tobacco product shops from the definition, otherwise the language is identical. Senate 5 and House 6 are identical. They clarify the definition of smoking. Senate 6 and House 7 are identical. They add a definition of public transportation. Senate 7 and House 8 change the limits on smoking in public places in current law into a complete ban, also prohibit smoking in places of employment and public transportation with exceptions and deletes the reference to designated smoking area. Exceptions in the law for certain private social functions and places of work are removed, and
requirement that the Commissioner of Health adopt rules regulating smoking in certain places is removed. And the difference here is that the House adds a paragraph that provides a different effective date, January 1, 2009, for bars, bingo halls, and restaurants, and adds a paragraph C that prohibits smoking marijuana, including medical use of marijuana in places of employment. Then subdivision 2 of that section is identical, strengthens the current ban on smoking in daycare centers and in daycare homes during their hours of operation. Subdivision 3 modifies the regulation of smoking in healthcare facilities and clinics. It's identical except that the Senate permits smoking by patients in a locked psychiatric unit under certain circumstances. Subdivision 4 of that section is identical in both bills, prohibits smoking in public transportation vehicles, but allows the driver to smoke when the vehicle is in personal use if a sign is posted.
Madam Chair, Senate Section 8 and House Section 9 are also identical. Clarifies the requirements that proprietors and other owners of public places, it requires them to make reasonable efforts to prevent smoking, including requiring proprietors to ask people to leave, refrain from smoking if they're smoking in a prohibited area, and ask them to leave if they don't stop smoking. It also prohibits proprietors from providing smoking equipment, such as ashtrays, in areas where smoking is prohibited. And it also eliminates a reference to smoke-free areas. On page 6 of the side-by-side, the Senate Section 9 and House Section 10, subdivisions 1, 2, and 3 are identical. These sections create several exemptions where smoking is permitted. Subdivision 1 refers to scientific studies, study participants. Subdivision 2, it permits smoking for traditional Native American ceremonies. And Subdivision 3 is the permits smoking in private places. Subdivision 4, they're nearly identical. They're permitting smoking in tobacco shops, except that the Senate specifies that it's permitted for the specific purpose of sampling the tobacco products. Subdivision 5 on the Senate side is a Senate-only provision that permits smoking on outdoor patios with under certain conditions. Subdivisions 6, 7, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 on the House side are all House-only provisions. These permit smoking in certain smoking rooms that are approved by the city, town, and county or local governments, in heavy commercial vehicles, private clubs where there's been no employees for the past 5 years, in farm vehicles and construction equipment, on agricultural land as defined by the tax code, and in disabled veterans' rest camps. On page 8 of the side-by-side, Section 10 in the Senate and 11 in the House are identical, except that the House has a Subdivision 4 that permits cities and counties to enact more stringent measures. These sections deal with the violations creating petty misdemeanors for both proprietors and people who smoke in areas where it's prohibited. And on the last page of the side-by-side, Senate Section 11 and House Section 12 are identical. It's dealing with the charitable gambling impact study. Senate Section 12 and House Section 13 both deal with dislocated worker program. The Senate requires the Job Skills Partnership Board to allocate sufficient funds to provide services under this program. And the House requires the Job Skills Board to enable this program to provide services, so the language is a little different. The House also includes employees of lawful gambling organizations, and there's a technical difference on which the House, Senate recommends the House language. I'm sorry, staff recommends the House language. Section 13 in the Senate is Senate only. That's the repealer of the designated smoking areas.
And Section 14 in the House is House only, and that is giving the name Freedom to Breathe Act of 2007.
Thank you very much. Another difference between the two bills is in the on page 1, line 1.3, there is a difference between the Senate language and the House language in the statement in line 1.2 is establishing the Freedom to Breathe Act is not in the language for the Senate. And also in line 1.3, there is a reference to known hazards in the House language that is not present in the Senate language. And there's a repealing language in the Senate language that's not in the House. All right. Thank you very much. I think what how we might be able to proceed is to think about this as our process of taking what we have come to in the various houses in terms of how to best approach this issue and blend them, form onto a new clean sheet of paper that we will bring back to our houses for approval. And perhaps the way to do that is to simply move through it section by section and address each of the sections one at a time and determine what it is that we need to, how we want to articulate it in the final bill. If that's agreeable with everyone, we can begin with the first section, which it's before section one. It would be line 1.1 in the Senate on page on your side-by-side language, R1 is the document that I'll be using. Mm-hmm. So the first thing that is different is language that allows for this to be described as the Freedom to Breathe Act of 2007. Everybody's sort of looking at me to sort of determine. This is, would you like to speak to this,
Thank
Representative
you,
Murphy?
Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Having spent some time working on the issues of tobacco, I think it's very important that we are clearly articulating what it is that we're hoping to achieve. And while I know there's differences in our bodies, in the way that we title things, I think in this case it might be prudent to yield to adding a title, as I think this is an important piece of legislation. It will be misconstrued at times, and I think it's important that we can stand strong in articulating what it is that we're hoping to achieve, and the title does that.
Is there anyone further would like to speak to that?
To be clear, you're
Senator
advocating.
Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Murphy, you're Representative Murphy.
I'll get this down.
I have Senator Murphy in my head. I'm in a conference committee with him, and I say Representative Murphy, and I think of someone from Hermantown. So.
I'm just good.
So you're advocating that we retain the title Freedom to Breathe Act. Of 2007.
Madam Chair and Senator Dibble, I am.
I support that.
Okay, so all we need is a motion.
Madam Chair, I move we retain the title.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I think the way to do that would be to adopt House Section 14, which adds that to the bill. The title just reflects what's in the bill, so.
But.
Thank you.
Representative Huntley?
There are two other differences. One is the word known in line 1.3, which the Senate does not have, and it's not a big issue with me, but I think I'd prefer the Senate language not so. We strike the word known. And the Senate also has that repealing feature, which we have to have. So if we're going to move the House language, I would say on 1.3, we strike the word known, and at the end, we add the language from the Senate referring to repealing Minnesota Statutes 2006, Section 1444.415.
I would just like to clarify, did we have the original motion already moved and seconded? Or are we able at this point to expand the motion? Did you second the motion?
Representative Murphy made the motion.
I did, and I'm, you know, happy at this early hour to expand it.
Expand it. Very good.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Rosen.
Neutral on the Freedom to Breathe Act of 2007. I think on the Senate position, we have taken a position where we do not like to name legislation like that. So,
Madam Chair.
Senator Dibble?
Summon the Senator Fussy on that point. I'm not.
Clearly, it is it is the Senate that took this off, so that's where we see the difficulty. Senator Dill.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members, I think it adds a little extra color and interest, and it makes it a little extra special to have a name on this legislation. So I support what Representative Murphy is suggesting here, and I think that Representative Hundley's got a good idea to take the word known off. We've got to have the repealer on, so I think if Representative Murphy accepts all those changes and just wraps them up in her motion, we can move forward.
People are starting to wake up here. We were having trouble getting some discussion of this, and now it's going. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think, when we went through the discussion on the House floor, a lot of the issue continued to go towards the economics. It continued to go towards other factors than what this bill is really meant to do, and that is create a safe environment for our people in public places. So I think the title, Freedom to Breathe, kind of encapsulates that, and that's part of that process that I think 20 or 30 years ago when Minnesota was a front runner in this and it was clean outdoor air was the big drive. I think it sets a stake in the ground that says this is what this is about. So I would move to adopt the Freedom to Breathe language.
Representative Norton.
Senator Sharon and members, I'm going to echo what I think I'm hearing the majority of people saying, which is the combination of the three changes. And one of the other, just to kind of confirm what I'm hearing some of my colleagues say, if we don't give this a positive spin, what it's being called in the public is the smoking ban. And I personally don't think that's what we're doing. I think we're taking a positive step. So I think by naming it, we are turning it into a positive. And so for that reason, in addition to the others, I'd support the name.
Senator Dibble and then Senator Rosen.
Madam Chair, we should be clear that the Freedom to Breathe Act of 2007 is not a codified title. So this this title won't end up in the statute books. It would just be used as, you know, common reference, you know, as we're out in the world talking about what we've done in 2007. Now that's an option. We could figure out how to codify it, maybe replace the Clean Indoor Air Act, which is codified. I believe that is in the statute books with the title of the Freedom to Breathe Act of 2007. Council can help us figure that out if that's what we want to do. But as things stand now, it's just simply the title of the bill. It kind of vanishes after it gets signed into law.
Perhaps Council could explain to me, in this paragraph that we're talking about now, where it says establishing the Freedom to Breathe Act of 2007, and then you reference back to Section 14, which is the Freedom to Breathe Act, and this act will be referred to as the Freedom. How are those different from one another, and why are you directing us to vote for this in front of what we're talking about now?
Well, Madam Chair, what you're looking at on the House side in 1.2 to 1.7 is the title of the bill, and the title is supposed to reflect what's in the bill. So in order to have the title say establishing the Freedom to Breathe Act of 2007, you have to adopt the section that would put that in the bill. and then the title would reflect that. And if you want to delete certain areas, then that would be adopting the Senate repealer in Section 13. And if you want to take out the word known on 1.3, as I'm looking at the bill, I think that's in Senate Section 1 and House 2. The Senate just talks about the hazards of secondhand smoke. And the House talks about the known hazards.
Mm-hmm. I missed that before.
So if you want to just talk about the, if you want to take out known, then you would be adopting Senate Section 1, which is erroneously identified in our comparison as being identical, but does have that one word difference. So the motion to adopt that title would be adopting Senate Section 1, Senate Section 13, and House Section 14. That then would be reflected in that title that you're talking about.
Would another way of saying that be that if we adopt, let's see, is it Section 14? Section 14, that it will, then it needs to flow all the way through. We will need to make certain that that flows all the way through. Well, and if we eliminate known in the first segment of this bill, then it has to follow all the way through. I don't know that, you know, why wouldn't we take a separate motion when we get to Section 1 under public policy and just to take a motion to accept the language and eliminate known?
You certainly could do that, Madam Chair, and then whatever sections you adopt, the title would be amended to reflect what you've adopted.
Right. I think in short, for sequencing, it might be helpful if we simply just moved through it and made those modifications as we went along, with the exception of the possibly going back and making certain that we accept Section 14 should this be the desire of the group to name this act. And the second question I have is in reference to what Senator Dibble was saying, what would codifying this mean? What would be the action we would have to take to codify?
Well, we would have to look at the existing law, and if you wanted to replace Clean Indoor Air Act with Freedom to Breathe Act, then we'd have to draw up an amendment wherever the first phrase appears to take that out and substitute Freedom to Breathe Act. It's been called the Clean Indoor Air Act since the 1970s.
Okay, well, I'm going to set that aside for now, that question for now. I also have to think about whether or not we can, since that was not really a processed in either bill, whether or not we can or if it's germane to introduce now. So let's just set that codification issue aside and go back to our motion, which is to include, establish the Freedom to Breathe Act of 2007, remove known hazards. Just known, thank you. Add the language that says repealing Minnesota Statute 2006, Section 144.415. Then there's also language on the House side that refers to Section 116L.17, Subdivision 1. And that refers to the displaced worker language related to the displaced worker. Is there any, you want to make any, we need to address whether that will be included?
Madam Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. There were strong feelings on the House about the dislocated worker language. And as Representative Severson mentioned, we spent a fair amount of time talking about the economic impact of this legislation on the House floor. And for members of the House, this language provides a safety net, if you will, for workers in establishments that may close as a result of this legislation. And so I think, at least from my perspective, it is important to consider including it.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Senator Latz.
Senator Sharon, Madam Chair, might I make a suggestion in terms of process? Maybe we should work through the bill, set the title aside, for now, work through the bill section by section, and then we'll see what we have at the end, and we can make whatever changes are necessary to the title to accommodate the changes that we've made throughout the bill, rather than trying to deal with all the issues just in the title itself.
So rather than take a motion now and take an action on the motion now?
Yeah, rather than dealing with stuff in the title, except maybe the name, Freedom to Breathe Act, I think we have consensus on that. But that's Section 14, House, so we could simply adopt that, but then set all the other issues in the title aside.
And come back and repair it after.
It after we've made whatever substantive changes in the act we're going to make.
Is that acceptable, Representative? So we will withdraw the amendment?
Sure.
At this time, and we'll move then. One of the, this first section, however, does include, because of Section 116L.17, all of the definitions includes language. This section, 1.9, is simply drawing language from the Displaced Workers Program and adds as an allowable applicant for this a person who is separated from employment in a restaurant or a bar due to the implementation of any state law prohibiting smoking. So that's what that language is about and is a part of this introductory language. I don't think I'd be interested to hear if anybody has any difficulties with that piece of.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Latz.
Where is the displaced worker language in the Senate? So, I mean, it all falls under the same topic, even if they're showing up in some ways in different sections of the bill. 12 and 13?
It's Section 12. Section 12. Correct.
12 in the Senate, 13 in the House, and apparently there's one bit in the definition section in the House that relates to that as well.
Would you repeat that? There's reference in the House in the first section, Section 1.9, that goes through the definitions and adds language that allows, it clearly defines persons who are separated from employment from being having access to displaced. Our only reference to that is Section 12.
So the substantive portions of the two bills for the displaced worker program are in Section 12 and Section 13, but the House, the way they did it technically, was they also went back and amended the definition section to deal with that. So I don't know if we can separate out the discussion of Sections 12 and 13 from the definition section very easily.
Well, we could.
Senator Dibble?
A suggestion, Madam Chair. We could, similar to what we just did with the title, we could set aside the definition of dislocated worker until we get down to Section 12 and 13, then come back and revisit that piece. We don't have to adopt this entire section in total. We can go through each definition one by one, or, you know, just set this one aside and deal with the other definitions if we agree to adopt definitions in the House position, and then come back and visit the dislocated worker definition at a later point after we've had the full-fledged, fully-flowered discussion about that subject. Does that make sense?
Thank you, Senator Dibble. It looks like we want to go backwards, start in the last sections and go forward backwards instead of go forward.
No,
I'm kidding, no. Senator Dibble. Start with Section 14. We have to have that first, and then Section 14.
So contentious.
So that's fine with me. If we want to come back to this first section, because other sections, I think we're going to run into that through the whole process. So I'm not going to object to people talking essentially what their perspective is about the definitions here. I'm simply asking at this point, in general, if this is adopted, if Section 13 in the House or 12 in the Senate is adopted with some modifications. Are people objecting to adding this language to the definitions under the Dislocated Workers Program? Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And one of the things that we have been discussing a little bit is this is the issue with the legalities of how do we actually determine that the business was going out of business and it was precipitated because of the smoking ban itself. There are a lot of businesses that are on the edge and would use this as kind of a legal tool to say, hey, we went out of business because of the smoking ban, and they may have been 3 months in arrears on their rent and the whole nine yards. So one of the proposals we had talked a little bit about is putting a sunset clause on this that basically says 6 months after the enactment, up to 6 months after the enactment of the smoking ban, businesses would be able to access this fund and kind of put an end date on this to say if you haven't failed 6 months past, it's probably erroneous to say that a year out that you went debunked because of the smoking ban. And I think that was one of the proposals that we had talked about. Whether or not council could put together an appropriate amendment for that would be the question. Or, you know, if we could have some discussion on that, I'm sure.
I'm open to having discussion now. Yeah. Yes, Senator Dibble.
Well, no, thank you, Madam Chair. Now that I've read all of the definitions, they all relate to the subject. So, yeah, this probably is the proper time. So jumping right into the heart of the discussion. As I recall the debate over this issue, I think it was generally agreed that including some language, you know, was maybe redundant, maybe caused no great feelings either way, because, you know, just a plain reading of, you know, the purpose of the dislocated worker program and the eligibility for it would allow workers dislocated, you know, for, you know, they were economically displaced for whatever reason, they would already be eligible. So this whole approach amounted to some comfort language. So, you know, I guess it's all a long-winded way of saying I could go either way, including the House provision, including the Senate provision, and saying nothing. I think the effect is the same, that workers who are dislocated, you know, and can demonstrate that they're dislocated because of, you know, great economic changes in the environment would be eligible for dislocated worker services of a wide variety.
Is there any discussion on the suggestion that we have an amendment that sets a limitation on the time?
Madam Chair.
Senator Dill.
We do have the biennium ending June 30th. Senate position in the dislocated worker program. So we do have that, and I think that is a prudent approach to ending the program, such as Representative Severson said.
Senator Rosen is suggesting that when we get to Section 12 or 13, there is a termination date on the House side, and that might be the way to do it. We may need to watch that and consider that as we talk about implementation date. That may be something that we'll want to come back to on the implementation date. So thank you, Senator Rosen. I think that accommodates to that. Senator Dill?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members, you said House side is really on the Senate side. The ending date is June 30th, 2009, identified on the Senate side, Section 12. One thing I notice here that on Section 13 on the House side, the dislocated worker program is going to include workers from bars, restaurants, and lawful gambling organizations. The lawful gambling organization doesn't appear on the Senate side. It doesn't also appear on the House side. If you go to page R1, line 2.1, the new language I added in the definition section, it indicates in this line that it's bars and restaurants. In other words, it's inconsistent. We're saying lawful gambling organizations on Section 13,
but not in
the definition section. So if we're going to do the House, most of the House language, to make it consistent, I think we need to pick up the lawful gambling organization and put it in both places.
So I'm keeping a list of these things. We're talking about following up on the sunset issue, which we'll need to modify depending on implementation, and recognize that we may need to add gambling organizations to the language at 2.1 on page R1 of the side-by-side, or delete it from the other section. Senator Dill to follow up, and then Senator Latz.
Then the other difference is that on sections 12 and 13, the House has got Job Skills Partnership Board capitalized, and the Senate does not have it capitalized. I don't know which is correct, but I think the House probably is correct in having it capitalized.
Madam Chair, that was a technical difference in the side-by-side where the staff recommended the House.
Thank you. Is there someone else that wanted to speak? Senator Latz, go ahead.
Madam Chair, it looks like what the House has done by adding the definition, basically saying, we're in the whole definition section for the dislocated worker program, and they've got all these criteria listed in lines 1.14 through the end, paragraphs 1, 2, 3, and 5, which used to be for the displaced homemaker. And basically, the House is carving out a new definition, dislocated worker. So whether or not they meet the other criteria for dislocated worker already in statute under paragraphs 1, 2, and 3, if they've been permanently separated from employment in a restaurant or bar or a lawful gambling organization, they get dislocated worker funds. Now, I agree with Representative Severson that this is just blowing a huge hole, potentially, in the dislocated worker program in what is probably the highest turnover industry in the state, where anyone who gets terminated, the excuse or the agreement or the way the application would be filed is going to be it was because of the smoking ban, no matter what the actual reason was. Now, the fact is, in the Senate, when this bill went through the committee that has jurisdiction over the dislocated worker program, they had no testimony on the impact on the dislocated worker program. They talked about all sorts of other issues that they wanted to do to the bill. So I'm not sure that there's really even an adequate factual basis for this other than as comfort language for some people. I'm really concerned about the impact on the dislocated worker program. And I think maybe the best way to carve up this fish is to do what Representative Severson suggested, which is to put in a relatively benign sunset date. So whatever the unknown impact this will have on the dislocated worker program, it's going to end when I think it's fair to conclude the impact from the smoking ban will reasonably end businesses. If they're going to go out of business, I think Representative Severson's right. They're going to know in pretty short order whether they think they can survive this or not.
Thank you, Senator Latz. We have accommodated to that in the Senate's language in terms of a termination date, and that needs to be modified based on the implementation date. And I was concerned, as you have indicated, about its impact. There are two things I'd like to say about that. First of all, my understanding of the Displaced Workers Program does not go into effect until a person has completed their unemployment benefits. So in order for this to have any meaning at all, the sunset date has to be such that somebody is displaced from their position for more than six months, I think. The other issue is that we did do an analysis, fiscal impact analysis, on the displaced worker provision and the unemployment benefits, and to be certain that those who are able to qualify for this for the purposes originally designed would not be negatively impacted. And I have that for you to see, but you can be assured that although we do not directly appropriate for this provisions, because open standing statutory appropriation authority allows for the amount necessary to fund these workforce development programs, regardless of the actual impact, is somewhat more or less than the amounts estimated in the fiscal note. The Workforce Development Fund annually collects approximately $42 million in revenue for these and related activities. And it goes on to say there is current, under the unemployment benefits, there is currently a balance of approximately $200 million in the federal funds account, and draws are typically replenished through employer contributions based on unemployment experience ratings. So we were assured by the fiscal analyst that those resources would be able to manage what is anticipated at it's in the worst case scenario to be able to resolve that.
Well, then, Madam Chair, I'd have a motion to make on this. that I don't want to scribe the language right now, but in terms of content for council to work on, that we add lawful gambling organizations to the program. That for now, anyway, we leave a sunset date in there, and when we determine an implementation date for the entire act, that we revisit that question. And that we capitalize Job Skills Partnership Board.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Norton.
Maybe we touched on this and I didn't hear it, but I would also like to point out the language also is different in that your bill allocates sufficient funds in the biennium and ours just enables the program. And we'll need to reconcile that as well. And I don't know if this is the time to do that, but after the capitalization of Job Skills Partnership, our wording is must enable the dislocated worker program.
Can you give me your reference?
Section 13 of ours.
7.7, I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, yours is line 7.7, ours is 9.2.
Well.
I think we identify these things. There's a motion on the floor here. I'm not certain we want to necessarily take a motion, Senator Latz, because we're just sort of identifying what we'll need to take motions on, or we can take motions now if you want to. So I'd like to complete this.
Well, and that was my question, Madam Chair, as to whether, if he was going to make that chair, whether he just wanted to adopt the entire first line and continue on and make one motion and do or not. I guess that's my question to him. He may not want to accept that.
Senator Dill.
Madam Chair, members, we can talk, but it may sound to be a little action. I think Senator Latz has got a good motion here, but I think you make a good point, Representative Norton. And I think maybe the way to, Senator Latz here would just adjust his emotion a little bit to include everything he said, to include the, just say House language. I think what we need to do is say House language and incorporate the ending date on the Senate side, have the staff work on that. And then also on page R1, incorporate the lawful gambling organization in the definition. I think if Senator Latz just wants to adjust the motion to that point, then we just get this
section.
At least get
this
started
resolved.
With something here.
Yeah, I would gladly do that.
All right, well, let's be clear. I let Representative Huntley can speak here.
I'm not obviously not a lawyer, but the on the first page, if we're going to add that new phrase, can we put a sunset on that as well, at the same date that we're going to sunset later? And so that would be pulled out of the law automatically.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point.
In the definition?
Yep, right.
In the definition. Okay. So Representative Huntley suggests that under 2.1, Section 1, 2.1, that we also add the sunset date there, depending on what it is we have for an implementation date. Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is on the sunset date. Does that allow sufficient time to receive your UI benefits and your dislocated to participate in both programs then? June 30th of 2009?
Well, I have the answer.
Senator Dill?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, we don't know yet because we haven't decided when this program is going to start. So we'll adjust that date. As Senator Latz said, we'll adjust the date later. But for the time being, let's just throw it in there and we'll adjust later.
But Madam Chair,
Senator
I think
Rosen.
That is a consideration we have to,
yes.
to look at. And yes. I'd like to also see the fiscal note on that at some point, have a copy of that.
Can share this with you. Madam
Chair. Senator Latz.
Maybe I can move the concept and let, if we can agree on the parts anyway, and then we can let council propose exact language for us to consider and adopt later.
Go ahead, Senator Latz. Before you do, may I ask the question, why, since we're doing this, wouldn't we include those things that were already suggested for changes by Representative Murphy, since its intent, since we're talking about its intent?
Representative Murphy's proposals regarding the title?
Regarding the title, repealing Minnesota Statutes 2006.
Madam Chair, they're different subjects. If you want to deal with discrete subjects at a time, my motion would deal with the dislocated worker program. The repealer is something we can probably all agree on and do that separately now or when we get to that section of the side-by-side. The title, I think we should do at the end. It's probably just a plug and chug at that point, once we've agreed on the substantive sections of the bill as we work
okay,
through.
Okay, well then, what we're moving back and forth on, and I think that it takes a little time to sort of decide how we want to proceed here, but initially we were talking about maybe making some motions and moving through sequentially, then we decided not to do that, now we're picking it up again. So I think that we need to, if the desire is to take some actions now rather than to go through and determine what it is that we generally agree on, we'll eventually move in, then I'd be perfectly happy to do that sequentially. So we'll try to follow that through as best we can through the entire process. Okay, so go ahead. Would you restate what it is that you would like to see in a motion of intent?
Sure.
A motion of intent.
Madam Chair, this might be a particularly challenging one because we've got a definition section in Chapter 116L, which comes at the beginning of the bill, even before the public policy statement, just because the number 116 comes before Chapter 144, so that's where it appears on our side-by-side. But the substantive program, the dislocated worker program, appears later in the bill, so we are jumping back and forth on this topic, but probably won't have too much on the others. But my proposal in terms of concept would be to amend lines 2.1 and 2.2 in the definition section to add lawful gambling and to add a sunset provision, date of which will be determined after we address the effective date of the legislation. And then in sections 12 of the Senate and section 13 of the House, that we ask counsel to draft up a program, basically adopting the House language, but also incorporating a sunset provision to be determined later, and changing the capitalization, the technical changes that staff recommend.
Is there a motion? Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Second. All right. Any further discussion?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Could I point out a difference that I see as we're sitting here between the House codified language and Section 13? On page R1, this would apply to people who are permanently separated from employment due to the implementation of any state law prohibiting smoking. But on R9, talks about who become employed due in whole or in part. It seems like a little bit of a policy difference, whether you want to include in whole or in part. Mm-hmm. I think they should be consistent.
It should be in whole. What is it?
Yeah, I would. Madam Chair.
Yes.
I would move
Representative
to strike
Severson.
I would move to strike or in part.
Mm-hmm.
9.5. I think the sole reason for the dislocated worker is that the burden of proof needs to be on the establishment that it is due to the smoking ban, and the other mitigating aspects of their going under are irrelevant to this act. And so I would hope that we could keep it to the main issue.
Madam Chair, I'll procedurally, I'll consider that a friendly amendment, so we have one motion on the floor.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. All right, let's move on. Section 1. Section 1 is identical, with the exception of known hazards on line 2.25 of the House.
Madam Chair.
Amendment.
Senator Dibble.
I'll move to strike the word known. I'll move, well, if they're identical, I'll move the House language.
Senate language.
Oh, Senate language.
I'll just move the second. Okay, that's good. I'll just move the Senate language.
Okay, there's a motion to move the second language. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Section 1 passes.
Senate language.
Section 2. Section 2 is a definition of indoor area.
I will move the Senate language. Chair.
There's a motion to move the Senate language. Is there any discussion?
I have a question on this. Was there any discussion on the House side or anywhere on the Senate side of whether there should be two or more walls? You only need two walls to consider it inside. Sounds a little strange to me that you can consider a place with two walls being inside. It's identical on both sides, but did it ever come up at all in any?
Anybody from the House side?
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Representative Severson.
I do not remember that discussion. I know when smoking rooms came up, the definition was very specific that it was four walls and a ceiling and an entrance door. Other than that, I don't recall any discussions on the indoor area.
Well, I think most people's concept of being inside, very few people consider it would be, I think very few people in the state would consider that they're inside if there's only two walls absent and two walls standing. They would hardly consider themselves inside, but.
Senator Dill, it's a ceiling also. So we're talking about an environment which is able to trap and contain secondhand smoke. And so that language is trying to describe an area that would contain and trap secondhand smoke. I have Amendment A66 that would be an amendment to your amendment that I'd like the committee to consider. And we'll have that passed out. During the discussions of what we would consider indoor-outdoor air, some of the concerns that were presented to me about being able to do some containment of business around the sale of liquor would be that the restaurants and the bars have to be able to have some delineation so they can control who has alcohol and who does not have alcohol, who's moving in and out. So in order to deal with this, along with some of the other discussions that we have about whether or not smoking would be allowed in outdoor spaces surrounding a business, and a lot of discussion pushing back and forth about how to work these definitions, we came up with a suggestion that we become clear that it's possible for businesses to have low walls, not, you know, it would be like a chair rail size. For the purpose of this subdivision that describes indoor air, what is indoor, that we would not consider a wall that is, it states, for the purposes of this subdivision, a physical barrier that is not more than 3 feet high is not considered a wall. So I'm offering that, or I would ask Senator Dibble to offer that as an amendment to Representative Huntley's amendment.
Madam Chair, I'll move that. And I'll speak to it as well, because I know that Senator Dill and Senator Rosen and I think you as well, had some conversation about this. It's kind of a rabbit hole. It's a tough one to struggle with. I think we're trying to remain consistent with the intent of the statute, which is about trapping and enclosing air and, you know, an exposure of non-smokers to smoke, yet, you know, not overreaching, and certainly allowing folks to do what they want in the areas where it doesn't present a hazard. And arguably, I mean, there are differences of opinion, and science seems to be, you know, pointing to some different conclusions. But I think there's general agreement that if you're outdoors and it's breezy, blah blah blah, you know, it's probably fine. And in Minneapolis, either through some oversight on how their ordinance was drafted, or, you know, through the actions of a sympathetic licensing inspector, a particular bar essentially built a room and declared it outdoors. And so they got stuck for a while. And so I think it's a tough one to grapple with. I think this amendment may solve some of that problem.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe Senator Dibble, you could describe more thoroughly a hypothetical for me, or give me an example, because the dimensions aren't making sense.
Well,
Senator Dibble?
I actually haven't seen this room with my own eyes. However, it's been described to me. And I actually saw some early drawings of it, or some drawings that were made of it early in its design process. Essentially, what happened was adjunct to the rear of a bar in Minneapolis, they built an enclosed room, declared it open because had large windows that could be opened, but anyone who was in that room, and I know people have been there, said it was effectively no different than a room. It wasn't outdoors. It trapped air. If you went in, you didn't even have to light up a cigarette to feel like you were smoking an entire cigarette yourself. And so we had a full ceiling, walls, around it. On two sides, I think the windows could be open from time to time. Effectively became a loophole, became an abuse of the ordinance because it wasn't drafted as tightly as was anticipated it should have been. Folks looked for a way to sneak around. I think they've since gone back and addressed it. I'm not sure exactly how they resolved it. But I believe the original language of this ordinance was drafted with that circumstance in mind. However, we don't want to prevent outdoor patios that are enclosed, for purposes of defining the area, necessarily. I mean, I don't want to get to the patio discussion, but if we decide to go with patios, sometimes folks build little half walls just to define the area, create some screening, some buffering, control ingress and egress from that. And a plain face reading of this language would prohibit those sorts of defining barriers.
And Senator Dibble, I think that whether we accept future language that we're going to discuss about preemption of local units of government around permitting smoking on the sidewalk or the areas around a business, that this still will be important because it's we're trying to clarify for whether it is us that defines whether or not smoking will be permitted on the sidewalks around businesses or municipalities or counties. We still want to be clear in this language that we are interested in supporting the half walls or walls less than 3 feet to allow a business to define a space outdoors and not have it be considered an indoor space. So that's the important part of this language, that they need that in order to conduct business where they have a liquor license. Yes?
Chair, Senator Dibble, would the implication of this amendment then be that anything over 3 feet would be?
It's Madam Chair's amendment, but I assume the answer to that is yes.
Yes.
It could be a little problematic, because I suspect there's a lot of people who build 4-foot walls on a patio area.
Representative Jumper, that is the problem. There it is, the problem. We can say 4-foot wall, and then should it be 4 or 3.5? I think... we went with 3 foot because it's a typical area about the height of a chair. So it's about the height of a chair, and so anybody that is then smoking in that area, that would still allow for the free flow. And remember, this still allows for two walls and a roof. And so we have a ceiling and two walls, and then we're simply saying that three-foot barriers would not be considered a wall. We're talking about indoor air at this point, indoor area. Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all the Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm still having a problem with figuring out a room that's only got two walls on it and a ceiling. How that constitutes room. I guess I'm thinking you could have a three-walled room, a triangle, but two parallel walls never come together. I guess that doesn't, to me, mathematically constitute an enclosure. I'm having a little hard time. Maybe there's some explanation why two instead of three here.
Representative Severson, it says the space between a floor and a ceiling that is bounded on two or more sides by walls, whether temporary or permanent, or by doorways and windows, whether open or closed. So if you are saying that three walls and a ceiling is considered outdoors, then you simply would have to open a garage door, and that would be considered outdoors. And that does not achieve the goal of being able to protect people from the hazards of secondhand smoke, because it is the free movement and the ventilation of air that is necessary for us to be comfortable about how we define what is indoor and what is outdoor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm stuck on this indoor area. We're defining an indoor area. And an indoor area would have to be enclosed by at least three sides and a roof. I'm looking for guidance here. I'm just having a hard time, because I think if you're talking about an outdoor area, and I guess this goes into the other part of the discussion. Are we going into the outdoor area to do those regulations? And hopefully we'll get to that in a second here. But on defining the indoor area, I think there needs to be some finite space. And with two walls and a ceiling, there is no finite volume in that particular area. It just becomes indefinite.
Okay, may I suggest that we separate what you're discussing now from the amendment that is in front of us? Because that will come back to the sure. Second Amendment, the First Amendment, which Representative Huntley has presented, and simply ask if there's any language, if there's anything else anybody wants to say about the amendment to the amendment. Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, that passes. So now we'll be talking about the amendment, Representative Huntley's amendment, so you can proceed.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Senator Dibble.
Yeah, I don't know what your intention is. I know that your intention is to not, load up testimony so we don't get bogged down in this conference committee. We've had, Lord knows, plenty of testimony as this bill has wound its way through the process. But I'm wondering if there's anyone in the room who has had some experience with the Minneapolis case and can help us understand how that was resolved. Maybe that will give us some insight into the two walls and a ceiling.
Would you like to hear from someone who would have some expertise?
I don't know if there's anyone in here who can do that.
Senator Rosen, you were going to speak.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Severson, I've struggled with this too, and I think several of us have struggled with this language also. And I was going to wait for my comments till after the amendment passed. But the two or more sides by walls, two walls and a ceiling and a floor, to me, is not structurally balanced. There, like you said, it's a space that would constitute more outdoor. So I've looked at this language, and I'm thinking is bounded by more than two walls instead of two or more.
Right.
Perhaps that would be something, because Senator Dill made a good point when we were talking about this once before. A picnic area, shelter, two walls, ceiling, and a floor, could be constituted as a indoor area, even though it's outdoor. So it's and that is strictly outdoor, but you've got the two walls, as this definition states. And so it's not very clear. I'm hoping that we can sift some of this definition out when we get to the outdoor, like Senator Dibble said, but I'm not very comfortable with this language at all.
Senator Dill, and then Representative Schumper.
Madam Chair, members, I know the example you use, Madam Chair, many times is that if you've got three walls, all you do is open up the garage door, and you've got your the space there. But really, if you open up the garage door, you still have four walls because the garage door doesn't open up to the corners. There's still going to be a little bit of a fourth wall there, even if you open up the door. So the person said three walls. Your example doesn't work because a garage door really garage has got four walls whether the door is open or not.
Representative Schumpfer was first, and then Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, I was trying to think, too, about this idea of two walls. And I couldn't come up with anything until I started thinking about, say,
a festival
or a county fair, something that might go 3 or 4 days, where you might put up a very large tent, for example, that would certainly have a roof and a floor.
And if both ends were open, you'd essentially just have two walls. So it seems to me there are
would be applicable. Been on enough festivals
to see enough smoking and drinking.
Large tents
that go on for many days.
I would think we would want to control that.
Representative Murphy?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was confused a little bit about this, too. I was thinking about a famous haunt on Grand Avenue, Billy's on Grand, which a lot of people go to, and it is constructed in such a way that you can really, like a garage, but not with the wall as you're describing, Senator Dill, open up the wall, and they have a patio, and they've done it purposefully, I think, to enjoy the outdoors, but also to deal with the ban. And so I just want to be cautious about how we draft this, because while I understand the two-wall issue, when you add the third wall, you get exactly what we have on Grand Avenue, which would then, I think, be a problem. Because you go right into the bar and the restaurant through that opening, which is no longer a wall. So adding a third wall may be a problem. The idea of more than two walls might work.
Madam Chair, now we're getting...
Yes, Senator Rosen.
Thank you. Now we're getting into it. We should have a construction
engineer
here. But still, even with the opening of the garage, as Senator Dill said, or in Billy's or in the fairs, there is still a structure on either end. There is still four corners of that building. And whether the window is this big or it's the size of this room, it's still structurally balanced. It's still considered a wall because it has to go up into the ceiling, or it has to go somewhere. So do you see what I'm saying? The size of the opening is the difference here, but you still have either three or four walls to structurally balance the building.
Conferees, I think we have to be very careful mm-hmm. about what we're doing here in terms of accommodating to something very unusual and in it lose, through a structural change, the ability to protect the public from the hazards of secondhand smoke, which I think will happen if we add a third wall. So I would really discourage that. I wonder, though, because we're talking about primarily, I think, is contiguous walls. If there's two walls that are separate from one another and there's free flow of air, that's a different situation. We're talking about where you have a contiguousness between the walls and the ceiling. And it has that capacity to trap air and does not allow for the free flow of air. So maybe what I would suggest, because we're getting a little bogged down here, is if there is the possibility that we could sub-confer on this a little bit, ask a couple of people to spend a little more time on this, understanding what the interests are here, which I think are... to make certain that we aren't... that we're defining indoor air in a way that... this makes it clear that when we begin to talk about what is allowed outdoors, that we can have a reasonable conversation about that, that we continue to protect the public from the hazards of secondhand smoke. So for the purposes of not having us all struggle here with this, can I ask a couple of conferees if they would sit down and try to work a little bit on this today as a subgroup? Who might I be able to get? Senator Dibble? Senator Murphy, and Representative Murphy. Thank you very much. So we'll set this amendment aside for now. Is that okay with you, Representative?
Fine.
Well, so we'll lay that on the table and come back to it later. Thank you.
Can I just raise one issue here? Madam Chair, members, I think it would be helpful if we knew what other states did in terms of defining this issue. So I don't know if staff or somebody could come up with that, but there's enough experience around the world that we should be able to tap into that to see what they're saying.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Dibble.
The subcommittee, Madam Chair, will come back with a report.
Thank you very much.
Actually, just my little visit down to the powder room, I have three different proposals handed to me. So different approaches from just within the state. So.
All right, great. Thank you very much. So that moves us then to place of employment, 2.1 subdivision 1B, place of employment. That language appears to be the same between the House and the Senate. Senator Dill, would you make a motion to accept that language for place of employment?
So moved.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Accepted. Public places. Section 4. Is there a motion to accept the House's language? Senator Dill?
Madam Chair, I will move that we accept the House language. It'll be Section 5. Section 5. All right. R3,
Section 5. Any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Dill? I'm sorry, Senator Dibble. Thank you.
Fine, I'm sure we get each other's mail all the time. He's accused of authoring one of his bills this year. I'm sorry. I just got a little lost here. We're on
Section 5 on page R3, Section 5. We're accepting the House language, which includes accept retail tobacco product shops as provided in 144.4167.
You know what? Madam Chair,
I don't have
R3.
No, we don't have R3.
You don't have that page at all?
No.
This is an older, this is a few days ago that I got this one. It's not R4.
Looks like the side-by-side in the packet does not contain R3.
No. Does it not? Does anybody not? Does everybody missing R3?
Oh, we've got.
No.
R3.
So what are we looking at? Section 5. House Section 5?
The motion is to approve House Section 5, which is the same as the Senate, with the exception that they include retail tobacco product shops as provided under Section 144.4167, Subdivision 4.
Oh, and Madam Chair, they're excluded.
They are excluded.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Excuse me. Go ahead.
And
it's okay.
Were we going to talk a little bit about what exactly those are, what tobacco shops are? I remember you and I. I don't want to preempt your or steal your thunder.
No, you can steal it all you want.
Subdivision.
Does this apply to this one?
Where does that come in?
We have a suggestion for the definition here under the exemptions. Excuse me, let me work through our bill here a little bit.
R6.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
R6,
I believe so.
During this discussion, if you wouldn't mind turning to R6, because this is one of these that relates. We're talking about tobacco product shops. R6, tobacco product shops. There's some differences between our language and the Senate Subdivision 4 and your Subdivision 4, in which we are more specific about that it be used for the purposes of sampling prior to purchase, and that's not in the House section. And we were going to make some suggestions about how to describe a tobacco shop, which may relate to whether or not you want to support this exclusionary language in the house, in the that or in this inclusive language of tobacco shops in the house. So I think that.
Well, I think.
Senator DeBolt, were you going to ask a question?
Well, I have a. Madam Chair, if we're in fact going ahead and I mean, if we agree later in the bill to grant an exemption to tobacco product shops, I'm wondering why it's necessary. Maybe the House can answer because it's their language. Why it's necessary to exclude tobacco product shops from the definition of public place? You know, it seems.
Unnecessary,
and you know, kind of layering on something that, yeah, that may have an implication we're not picking up on right now.
Representative Norton.
Well, I would only say that, Madam Chair, that it exempts them as provided in the section that it references. So it's not exempting them completely; it's exempting them as provided in the subdivision and rules we're going to talk about, which is why I think it's in there, but.
Senator Dill.
Hey, Madam Chair, members, I'm thinking that maybe Senator Dibble's got a good point here, that we're defining a public place, and we define all these places that are public places, and then we say that a cigar shop or tobacco shop is not a public place. And I really think that's probably unnecessary if we adopt the House language, which I think we should do rather than our language on R6 on the tobacco product shop. And looking at both sides and considering this email we got from Cigar Association of America, there's different reasons why people would smoke in a tobacco shop. And in the case of the Senate language, we're saying that the only time you can smoke in a tobacco shop is prior to the purchase of tobacco. And the House does not have that language. So if you go in there and sample something and don't buy anything, you're still within the limits of the law.
Thank you, Senator Dill. I understand what you're saying. I think the best way to resolve this, given what Senator Dibble points out, that this may not be necessary language in discussions of public places because we're going to be talking about this as an exemption later, that if it would be okay with you, if you would withdraw your amendment, and instead, we may take the motion to accept the Senate's language.
Yeah, well, I'll just replace my language. Madam Chair, I move that we, first of all, I withdraw my amendment. I'll reissue a new amendment that we accept Senate language in Section 4, R3.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Dill. Is there any further discussion on the new amendment? Representative Schumpfer.
Yes, Madam Chair. I'm a little confused about the term educational facilities other than public schools. Certainly public schools are going to be defined as public places, aren't they?
Absolutely, they are, by definition. I think that's an interesting question. If we repeal former language that already states that you cannot smoke in public places. We don't want to repeal any language that disallows smoking in public places, which is already covered under the current law.
And I suppose it somewhat hinges on the, as defined in Section 128.05. I mean, I don't know what that is, but hopefully someone does.
Madam Chair?
Senator Latz?
That's existing statute, so it's not any changes that either side is proposing to make. I understand the question. I suspect that in the public school laws, there are separate regulations relating to tobacco smoking. Apparently, it's been part of the Clean Indoor Air Act language for some time.
So, to that regard, I would just want to make sure that if we later repeal anything that's related, that includes the language under the Clean Indoor Air Act and replace it with this, that we're not repealing something that relates to public places. So I'll ask Dave to make sure that that occurs. On the amendment, any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. If you wouldn't mind, just a two-minute recess, I'd like to just confer with the Senate DFL for just a moment.
Yeah.
Just the DFL?
That's not us.
Not us?
Senate conference? Or?
That'd be R4.
You want to ask Dave? Are they the ones that kind of put this language together?
Okay, that ends the recess. We're now back in session. Senator Dill? Senator Dibble? I'm going to be having trouble all day now that I've started that. Thank you. Thank you. Sorry, Senator Dibble.
It's better than calling me Representative Dabney, which I got for 2 years while I was in the House from the Speaker who served me.
Yeah, I was called Representative Blatz over and over again by Speaker Sphygum. I don't know how he made that.
Council has a response to Representative Shumpert's question about... was it your question?
Yeah.
About public schools.
Public schools is great.
Madam Chair, members, I think that the reason for this language in current law, in the definition of public place excluding a school, is because the law that you're not amending has tobacco products prohibited in public schools. So there's a total ban already on smoking in public schools, whereas in current law, smoking is allowed in public places under certain conditions. So that's why the schools are not defined as a public place, because they have different existing requirements.
Senator Dibble.
So thank you, Madam Chair. So to restate, if we were to include public schools, it would goof up the total prohibition that's called for in another part of the statute.
Okay.
Because we got all these conditions and exceptions and definitions of indoor and outdoor.
On and on.
You know, and we're letting them... So.
Representative Huntley?
Madam Chair, you really need to go ahead to R4, what we're doing here on page R3 is sort of redefining what public place is, but then you go to R4, and it says public places, places of employment, public transportation, and public meetings. Smoking shall not be permitted in. No person shall smoke in a public place or a public meeting in a place of employment. So... at one point, it looked like they used to define a place of work as a public place, and we're taking that out in public on page 3, but then you're reinstating it on page R4.
Okay. All right, so very good. Okay, so we have a motion to accept public place as defined by the Minnesota, the Senate language. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right. Now section 5 is the definition of smoking. The language is the same. Is there a motion to accept this language?
I'll move the Senate language.
A motion to approve the Senate language on Subdivision 4, smoking. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Subdivision 5, or Subdivision 6.
Section 6 in the Senate.
Section 6, Section 7, in the House. Public Transportation Subdivision 5 is the same.
Move adoption.
Is there any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Passes. Section 7 is the Minnesota Statute 2006, Section 1441, is amended to read these following prohibitions. Public places, subdivision 1. Language is the same with the exception of a reference to A. A letter A?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's
because that's technical.
We can get because there's a B and a C in the House side.
All right. Well, we'll get those lined up as we go along. In terms of the language, for this will be just lines. Let's focus on lines 3.9 through 3.20 in the Senate language and 4.13 and 4.24 in the House. It's essentially the same. Is there a motion to accept the language?
Madam Chair, I'll move that we accept that language with the exception of the parenthetical lowercase a to be determined later.
Very good. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. All right. Now we're looking at line 4.25, page R4, section. It refers to sections 1.144.414 become effective for bars, bingo halls, and restaurants. It is the date of implementation.
The Madam Chair.
Yes. Representative Hummer.
Actually, that phrase was added by the bingo hall people because they were not listed someplace else, so it was questionable whether when they were they would get the same delay as bars and restaurants, and so that's why bingo halls was added there. And this is the House implementation time.
May I suggest that because this may be an issue that we need to have some substantive discussion on, and the Senate will be going on the floor at 10, can we set this aside and bring this back later? Then on R4, line 4.27, the House refers to smoking marijuana.
Well, Madam Chair, the
before or after the conference committee.
Representative Huntley would like to speak to this.
The bill elsewhere covers the smoking plant products. So I'm not sure this phrase is needed.
It's duplicative because the definition of smoking includes plant products, is what Representative Huntley is saying. So,
where is the cross-reference for that?
The
definition.
Definition of smoking.
The definition of smoking.
Smoking on page
4.4. R3.
R3. Oh, back to the missing section.
Staff. Right back to the definition of smoking. It reads on R3. Smoking means inhaling, exhaling, smoking from any lighted cigar, cigarette, pipe, or any other lighted tobacco or plant product. So the question is whether or not that sufficiently resolves the issue that's described on line 4.27. Senator Dill.
Well, Madam Chair, members, if the medical marijuana bill does pass and is signed into law, how does it work if the physician recommends medical marijuana for somebody who is residing at a nursing home or is even at home but has home health care, and that which makes the home a place of employment? And that's my question.
Would you repeat your question? Because this language would prohibit medical use of marijuana if that became law. This is a prohibition. It's not only illegal use of marijuana that's prohibited, but also what would be considered medical use of marijuana.
Well, that's what it says, the medical use of marijuana. In other words, the only place you could use a place, your medical use of marijuana would be limited to some place where there's nobody else working. So if you have a nurse or if you're in a nursing home or if you're someplace where you're in some assisted living facility, how do you... Do you have to get in your wheelchair and go outside to medicate yourself?
That's right. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is worthy of some additional thought and discussion. However, if you look down a little further, Senator Dill, to healthcare facilities and clinics, on 5.7 and 5.8 in the House side, it says for adults may smoke in a designated separate enclosed room maintained in accordance with applicable state and federal laws for healthcare facilities and clinics. So there would be the opportunity for, if this bill were to ever pass, which I don't think it will yet this year, but it may. So that might be sufficient provisions. Maybe not. Maybe we don't want to send them into a separate room, but maybe we do. You know, it's not as if, though, Madam Chair, marijuana smoke doesn't have carcinogens and, mm-hmm. you know, other nasty things that people who don't smoke don't want in their lungs.
I think that, as I read this, what I understand is that in our earlier language, we say that smoking any plant product is considered smoking, and that that's our definition of smoking. This language would preempt Subdivision 3 in the case of medical marijuana. It would make it would prohibit the use of medical marijuana should that become something that we passed. So I really think it's better for us to stay silent on this, and then whatever occurs, the language already allows for the fact that it's obvious that we would not allow for smoking of marijuana. But if it becomes legal, then it is covered under our description of what's allowed in a healthcare facility, which is a place of employment. Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, if we make other exemptions in any places of employment from the smoking ban, then if it's the intent of the House, regardless of those exemptions, to ban marijuana smoking, then this language would need to remain in the bill. If we exempt, for example, patios, and this language is taken out of the bill, then theoretically medical marijuana could be smoked on patios as well. So it kind of depends on what the intent of the House was here.
Okay. Representative Huntley.
The medical marijuana bill as it stands right now bans smoking medical marijuana in any public place.
Mm-hmm. That might best be resolved in that bill and not in our bill. Okay, so the motion, there's no motion. We're silent on this. We can be silent.
By being silent, Madam Chair, would we not need to remove 4.27 and 4.28?
No, because we are we're choosing language to go in a final bill, so we can choose move this into the bill.
Well, I would move that if you need something.
Triple negatives here. We can just move on. So let us move on then to daycare premises. This language is the same between the House and the Senate. Is there a motion to accept the language under Subdivision 2 on page R4?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Sievertson moves. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right. Section B. This is the section in the Senate bill that's different from the House. It allows smoking in locked psychiatric units. Is there anyone who wants to make a motion in regard to this section, Subdivision Section B under Subdivision 3?
It's Betzold's provision.
Well, Madam Chair, I'll move the Senate language on Subdivision 3. And it's all identical on both sides except for the added language on the Senate side that allows for, under the physician's order, the patient may smoke in a locked psychiatric unit.
Okay, so the motion is to accept healthcare facilities and clinics definition, including the language that's in the Senate that allows patients in a locked psychiatric facility in a ventilated area if authorized by a physician and is under the policy established by the administration of the program to be allowed to smoke. Representative.
Chair Sharon,
having spent a lot of time in mental institutions and not as an employee, not as a patient, and having this issue not come up in the House in any form, I guess I just feel like as a House member, and hopefully I'm not speaking out of turn here for the others, but this is a I think this language is very needed, and I appreciate you putting in there. This is a residence for many people. Many individuals in mental facilities are there for extended periods of time, and while I would like everyone to stop smoking because it's better for their health, I can tell you firsthand the language here that allows the doctor to work with the patient for cooperative reasons and dealing with other issues of perhaps more importance for that individual at that time, that this is needed. So I guess I would encourage my House members to go along with this language as well.
Representative Murphy, did you want to speak to this? I would like to simply say that I think that I have experience in working in some of these long-term. I think that the intent of this, and you can help me remember, is that there are short-term acute psychiatric situations in which people are treated. And it is in those acute situations that it was Senator Betzel that introduced this, that it might be helpful in order to, especially in the initial phases of gaining cooperation or facilitating adaptation for a person in acute crisis, psychiatric crisis, by allowing smoking. But I'm wondering if you would look at this language and think about the long-term psychiatric patient. I can see that in some of the long-term psychiatric situations that we might be placing physicians in a really tough situation about having to allow some, like the Minnesota Regional Treatment Center or some of the longer treatment centers where people are there for a long time and they have already made the adaptation, Minnesota Security Hospital, for example, to not smoking. If you'll just give me a pause that I can look at this one more time. Smoking patients and locks like it. And it will set, and so what happens is that for this patient who's acutely psychotic, in order, we're trying to gain some kind of cooperation, we're going to allow the physician to say you can smoke. In this patient over here who's in there for depression, for example, and may be more cooperative in the process, is wondering, well, if he can smoke, how come I can't smoke, or she can smoke, why can't I smoke? So,
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The language, well-ventilated area, would that then require this unit to have a separate smoking room with ventilation?
It is as it is. Mm-hmm. Right now what happens is that the patients are taken out of the hospital under supervision into outdoor areas to smoke. But if someone's acutely ill, is what this is, the intent of this is, that even with intensive supervision, it would be unsafe to do that. So anyway, this is just some of what we unintended consequences that might be created in an effort to resolve a legitimate concern. Senator Rosen.
I guess I err on the side of compassion on this this language, and I think it's up to the physician to decide to treat him right.
Senator Dill.
Madam Chair, I'd like to ask Representative Norton about the word locked. Locked psychiatric unit. Should we be deleting the word locked?
Representative Norton.
Sure, Sharon. My experience wasn't in the state of Minnesota. I've worked in three different mental health facilities or state regional centers. Some are locked and some are not. I'm not certain if what Minnesota's mental health facilities look like at this particular time. I guess in many of the ones I worked in, acute as well, they weren't locked.
Representative Norton, I think that my reaction to that, Senator Dill, would be the locked helps a great deal in terms of the issue that I'm talking about, because you're creating an environment of increased safety by establishing a boundary that's that for a person who's impulsive or is likely to be responding to voices or something, it's in a locked unit. So the locked language does help with the issue that I'm concerned about, that somebody that is not that intensely sick may not be, would be in a less secure unit.
But Madam...
Senator Dibble and then Senator Dill. Senator Dibble?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think locked is key. I think that gets to the intent of Senator Betzold's motion, you know, effort to insert this, because I think otherwise, you know, you have folks, you know, you have provisions for folks in healthcare facilities and clinics in the preceding paragraph, and additionally, if, you know, if the facility is not locked, I assume they can walk out in the yard and have a cigarette. But when folks are locked indoors and some policies are established by the administrator of the unit and the physician says this is probably best if we allow this person to smoke, then we allow that person to smoke. Now, I have to say that I'm glad this language has all these qualifications and caveats. I think language that was brought forward previously when then Representative Latz and I were authors of the bill, the effort was just to allow, you know, anyone in a facility who wanted to smoke, and there was a great deal of difference of opinion among medical providers and the mental health consumer community in opposition to that notion for a variety of reasons, not the least of which was just generally allowing anyone who wants to smoke, it interferes with their medicine regimen.
That's great.
It also has all kinds of other implications. Another big issue, of course, is the impact on employees in that space.
Senator Dill?
Well, Madam Chair, members, my thought on it is that we ought to let the physicians have some freedom to make some choices here, and if you say that they only have a choice, and if the patient is in a locked psychiatric unit, I guess my inclination would be to broaden their freedom to do what they think is best by deleting the word locked so they can deal with this issue on a case-by-case basis as they see best.
Is there a motion to this? Has this been introduced as a motion?
Yes, it's a
motion.
I didn't think about the locked part, but I did move to accept the Senate language.
Okay. So that's what's on the table now. If you want to try that out and see if there's enough votes to support that, you could make an amendment. You could add that to your make an amendment to the amendment, or we could proceed here.
I don't know.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen.
I don't think we're going to get this figured out because it probably would be advisable to have Department of Human Services testify about this, dealing with the sex offenders and allowing them to smoke at state facilities. So perhaps we should at some point have them testify on how this is going to those facilities.
Okay. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I won't belabor this, but, you know, when I think about this and I think about my experience in nursing, anyone who, you know, is in an acute condition, whether it's an acute mental condition or any acute condition, has restrictions or treatments that are restrictive as they move from that acute phase to a more healthy phase. And when I think about a psychiatric unit, I feel a lot of compassion about folks in an acute state being able to smoke in dealing with the cooperation issue, but also as a means of coping. But I think as they become more healthy, the need to adapt to the environment around them is important. And this seems to me to be a part of a care plan, if you would. And I would support the language as it is, a locked unit, because I think it speaks to the acuteness. But I wouldn't want to, you know, broaden that to allow a physician or a nurse practitioner to say, in this case, patient X gets to smoke, and in this case, patient Y does not. I'm persuaded by your perspective about the acute condition and think the language as drafted is appropriate.
Senator Rosen, the language leaves this to the administration. If there's a policy in that hospital that will not provide for this, for physicians to do this, then that would not occur. So the state hospital or any of the hospitals can, by policy, it has to be in accordance with, established by the administrator of the program that allows the treating physician to approve smoking. So I think it allows for that differentiation among the institutions to resolve this issue within their own authority.
But, Madam Chair, that could vary from location to location then. Is
yes.
that correct?
Yes. According to the conditions and the uniqueness of each place. Because it is unique. Even some hospitals have all locked units. And then, like at North Memorial, they have a locked unit. But then within the locked unit, there's an intensive care unit that is another locked unit within that. And the level of acuity is quite variable.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this language that allows for the administrator of the program to determine what is appropriate within their psychiatric setting, within their institutions, with their physicians, is important to keep. Somebody else want to speak? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I support the language as proposed in the side-by-side, the Senate language. I would like to deal with the locked. I'm not prepared to delete the word locked. So if Senator Dill would like to treat that issue separately, or, you know, otherwise I'm forced to vote against the whole motion if he amends his current motion.
The current motion is to accept the Senate language.
And Madam Chair, you
Senator Rosen.
Madam Chair, you don't think there needs to be discussion on the state level, the department level, as far as how this is going to affect each of their facilities and what kind of patient they're dealing with?
No, I do not, okay. Senator Rosen. I think that the language that says under a policy established by the administrator of the program allows each program
okay.
to determine what's appropriate within the unique character of these hugely varying acute care facilities. Senator Dibble.
That's correct.
That's correct. That's what you
Madam
were going to say.
I checked in with counsel, and counsel concurs.
Well, Madam
Senator Dill.
Madam Chair, Senator Dibble, if the facility is not locked, then the physician doesn't have the ability to allow the patient to smoke under this provision. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, I'll need to check in with counsel.
Senator Dibble, would you mind if I would just interject here? If you want to check in with counsel about that, the person that's not on a locked unit is free to move. That's what's important, is that a person who's not on a locked unit can go outside without supervision. The privilege levels are different, and so the locked nature of a unit has to do, and even a person on a locked unit, Senator Dill, may have a privilege level that allows the person to leave the premises without any difficulty. This is really referring to those who, because of the nature of the where they're at in the course of their illness, they're acutely ill and can't leave the unit. They're under strict controls, maybe even one-on-one kind of supervision. But a person who's on an unlocked unit is there because the level of acuity is lower and the person has higher levels of privileges and has access to things that anybody would in terms of going out, visiting family, doing things. Does that help you clarify? Senator Dibble?
Oh, thank you, ma'am. My question to counsel was whether or not the previous paragraph allowed unlocked psychiatric units. It spoke to unlocked psychiatric units. It does not. I mean, so we can't look to the previous paragraph to satisfy your question or your issue, Senator Dill.
Okay. On the motion is to accept the language of the Senate version B in healthcare facilities, and actually to accept all of Subdivision 3 healthcare facilities and clinics. Representative Schumpfer.
Madam Chair, I just had one question yet. Does the first paragraph in what we're considering right now, does that allow nursing home residents to smoke in their own private room? It does not allow?
It does not. It's in a designated, separate, enclosed rooms maintained in accordance with the applicable state and federal laws.
That could be their own, Madam Chair. That could be their own private room.
Where's our language
that
here?
That is required by federal law.
I mean, I was wondering about
yes. Excuse me. That's correct. You're treating this as space as their homestead, as their own home.
That's what I was.
Yes.
It's a little ambiguous, but just so we all are on the same wavelength about that.
Thank you, Representative Huntley. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This language, now, does this allow these facilities to have smoking if they've been non-smoking? Some of these facilities that perhaps have a non-smoking rule now, this allows them to smoke? Allows them? I'm just a little confused about, and perhaps the department can clarify.
Are you referring to the nursing home facilities, Senator?
No, I'm talking about like the sex offender facilities and.
No, this language 4.5 allows a physician under a physician order only that they can allow an individual patient based on their acuity level to use cigarettes in order to as a part of their care plan, as a part of their treatment.
Madam Chair, could I? I'm
excuse
sorry.
Me, Representative.
I just want to clarify. Just because you're a registered sex offender does not mean you're mentally ill or in a state facility. That's a correctional facility for the most part. So I think we just need to be clear that sex offenders are not necessarily in a mental health facility or considered mentally ill. So we may be talking about two different things here. Just for clarification.
The Regional Treatment Center is not the correctional facility of the sex offenders program. But nevertheless, you know, the essential part of your question, I think, Senator Rosen, is that this has to be done by a physician order. It doesn't allow smoking in an institution. And even with a physician order, it can only be done if there's an administrative policy that agrees with that and allows for that in a locked psychiatric unit.
So, Madam Chair, we are
Senator
allowing for the administrator, even say this is a non-smoking facility, up to date.
Yes.
We are allowing the administrator to say, now you can start smoking by this language.
Let's say it's a hospital that has a psychiatric unit, Senator Rosen. What this is saying is that in a hospital with a psychiatric unit, that on that unit, a physician may, on a locked unit, if they have a locked psychiatric unit, if the administration has a policy that allows for it, a physician may allow their patient who's acutely ill to smoke as a part of their treatment program. A physician has to say it's a part of their treatment program and allows smoking on that locked psychiatric unit.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yeah, Senator Latz.
I think the answer to Senator Rosen's question is yes. If there's a locked sex offender program at St. Peter, for example, and if they currently don't allow smoking, that's their choice, I guess. This would continue to allow them to have that choice. They may not exercise that choice. They may continue to ban smoking in the facility if the administrator decides they want to continue to ban smoking in that facility. If they have a change in the approach that they want to take to administering that program, they would have the flexibility to do that under this provision.
I'm not sure that I'm agreeing with what you're saying, Senator Latz. First of all, the sex offender program is not, we want to separate sex offender program from the psychiatric unit.
Well, maybe that's a definitional issue then. If that's what you're specifically asking about the sex offender program, whether it's included in the definition of psychiatric unit, that needs to be clarified in some way.
It's clearly locked. Okay. Let's set this aside, and we need is to clarify. So that's the reason that we need to do that is the sex offender is a long-term program. Mm-hmm. People are withdrawn from cigarettes. It's a great place for withdrawing from cigarettes because they can provide all the support services you need for that. So this clearly is intended to be in the short-term acute psychiatric setting, and maybe that may be some of the language that we might be able to add to this. Representative Shum.
Madam Chair, maybe we need to say something specific about correctional facility.
It's banned.
It's a banned in correctional facilities. Yes.
Trying to correct their behavior.
So wouldn't.
And the sex offender unit is a correctional facility. That's a good point.
Okay.
Senator Latz?
No, what is it?
I have nothing to add.
Pardon?
I have nothing to add.
Nothing yet. Well, let's just set this aside. Make sure that we're clear about that, that the sex offenders program is listed under correctional facility, is not confused with psychiatric setting. And Representative Huntley?
Yeah, it depends which. The sex offenders first go to a correctional facility. When they finish their term there, then put in a Department of Human Services facility.
So let's get that.
So it's no longer a correctional facility. It's basically a hospital.
Madam Chair. Representative Senator Rosen.
Before we vote on this, could we get some clarification as far as the program, what the definition of the sex offender, whether it's correctional or psychiatric, from the department?
Yes, we will. That's why we're laying it on the table, to get some of these things clarified. Maybe better to simply not speak to this. Maybe creating more complications than we intended. So we'll lay this on the table, this amendment on the table, for further examination. And with that, I think we'll recess until after, at the call of the chair. And what do I anticipate that will be? I know that the Senate is meeting at 10 o'clock on the floor. Do you know what the House is doing today? Is there any indication?
Same thing.
You're meeting at 10?
Mm-hmm.
Are we?
So we'll gather after our floors are finished. Thank you.
Can we leave this
room reserved?
This room is reserved for the day.
Okay. Good.
So leave everything here, huh? Sure. The Minnesota Sex Offender Program is a DHS. It's not a correct.
Connoiter.
God.
I really think you need to keep in mind this idea of these community festivals.
I think that